and we're going to play something here, if I can get the mic up close to it. The idea for this particular sermon came because I heard a song, so I want to share the song with you. It's a bluegrass song. I don't know that we have any bluegrass fans in here, but I like to listen to bluegrass. The song is by Doyle Lawson and Quicksilver. He's one of the first generation bluegrass musicians, has his own band now. This got me thinking. Let's see if I can play it here. Now you know why this is on my mind. Because I heard that. Now we have a group here, congregation that is mostly, well, it's a mixture. There's a lot of us, though, that are my age or older. And we have a few that are younger and some that are much younger. And that's a good mix to talk about this. The thing I was writing behind the board here, or the screen, It's supposed to be a quote from Abraham Lincoln. In the end, it's not the years in your life that count, it's the life in your years. Anybody know about that quote? Heard that quote? As far as I know, as far as I could research, it's not from Abraham Lincoln. It's one of those things that the internet has done to us where they, you know, you got a clever saying and it doesn't mean anything unless you attribute it to somebody who's famous. So this has been attributed to Abraham Lincoln, but as far as I can tell, he never said it, or not publicly anyway. And if you care, this isn't important, but I'll just share it with you anyway. Adlai Stevenson used this in his stump speeches back in the 50s, early 50s, as early as 1952. He would spread that quote in his speeches, so there's a record of that. But before that, in 1947, there was a doctor. See, I wrote his name down. Edward Stieglitz, who wrote a book called The Second 40 Years. And part of the publishing blurb for that book was adding life to your years, since rather than adding years to your life. So for all we know, it could have been just some publisher at the printing house, you know, whoever printed that book. We don't really know who came up with that quote, but it's a famous one. And it has to do with my topic today. Today's topic is adding more life to your years. First, we're going to look at two Bible verses that I think apply here. They're a bit mysterious. They sound mysterious to me. I've always wondered what they meant, and I determined that I would spend some time to study into them to see if they made more sense to me after I studied them. And they do. And I don't know if they made sense to you or not, but I hope that after today they'll make more sense to you. And we'll see what those two verses tell us and what they might have to do with this topic today. Then we'll look at the context of those verses and see what they have to tell us about today's topic. And if you'll have your mind on this as we go through, what I'd like to do is ask for your input, because we're gonna start accumulating a list of ways to add life to your years. We're going to start with those verses and the context of those verses. We could fill the entire board and all the boards in this building with things from the Bible that the Bible tells us how to add life to our years. I'm not going to do that. Just going to stay in the context of these two particular verses from Paul's writings. But once we do that, then I want to open it up, because we have people that have a lot of years here and have thought about these things. You know, I'm not the first one to think about it. I'm just getting older. But I've already, you know, I've got some things, you know, that if you don't bring up, I will. As I get older, I think, oh, you know, this is something that means more to me now than it did 30 or 40 years ago. So please be thinking of ways that you have noticed in your life or are noticing in your life that are ways to add life to your years, things that are good to do. And we'll add them when we get to the end part of the sermon. Some of us have, you know, we have the years part down pat, you know, some of us. It's the life part that maybe we can work on. Can't do much about the years part. So where I want to start in this topic of how to add life to your years is in Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5, and that's a pretty famous chapter. We got all this instruction on marriage, relationships between husband and wives and so forth. There's a verse in there that has always been interesting to me, and I've never bothered to study into it until now. And that's verse 16. And in the King James, I'll just read it. It says, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Redeeming the time because the days are evil. And that's just taking it out of its context right there. Anybody have, you have different versions than I do. This is, King James is what I brought with me today. What do you have, John?
Making
the best use of the time because the days are evil. Okay, what version is that? What translation?
ESV.
The English Standard Version. Okay, and there's others that have that as well. Anybody else have something that's different from the King James or different from John's? I can give you a couple. The New American Standard says, make the most of your time. the English Standard Version, as he said, make the best use. The Holman Christian Standard Bible, that's also makes the best, the most of your time. New International, and I have to admit I've had a bias against the New International just because of, I guess, growing up in the church and people felt that they take liberty with the language at times, but there's sometimes when they get it just right, I think. They say, make the most of every opportunity. That's how they translate it. And the Good News Translation, good use of every opportunity. So you have good use, make the most of, and so forth. I will submit to you that those translations do a much better job than the King James. What does it mean to buy time or to buy back time, redeem time? I think for understanding this verse, it's better just to forget about that. I'll explain what that word means and how it was used in the Greek in a minute. But to think, well, redeeming the time, it's not the kind of an expression we would use. Like, you can't add more years to your life, right? You can't buy back that time. But what you can do, according to these other translations, you can make the best use of the time you do have. So I think that's a better way to understand it. You know, how can you buy back? The thing is, if you translate it literally from the Greek, the word means, big word, it means buy time. Actually, it means to buy. The time is a separate word. So it means to buy. So if you literally translate it, it means to buy time. The question is, what's it mean? What's it mean in the context? What was it talking about? In the Greek, the word, it's exagorazo, something like that. Sorry, shouldn't even bother with that. But the point is, it means an intensive sort of buying. That is to a buying which exhausts all possibilities. Kind of like you, to use an example, maybe you found this yard sale and they didn't know the value of what they had there and they got all this stuff that's worth a mint. And you know, you'll buy it all up, won't you? You'll exhaust all the possibilities. You'll do the most with that. And that's what this. That's how this word is used. It's not just buying or buying back. It's buying in a way that makes the most use of the opportunity for buying that you have. So what is the limit? I mean, what limits our possibilities in life? It's time. So that's the context here, is that you're limited by time. So you got to make the most use of the time that you do have. So specifically here, it means that effort must be employed to make all possible good purchases within the available time. So all the, you know, John Stan's translation there and the others are doing a good job of giving you the gist of what it means there. It's to make the best use of the time that's available. Doesn't necessarily mean, you know, like you can go out and buy some time or purchase some time. That's not the point of it. It's to make great use, profitable use of what time you do have. That Greek word is used one other place in the Bible, and in the same kind of way. It's in Colossians chapter 4, and I'll read that one too. Colossians chapter 4 and verse 5. Here are the verse, and again, we're breaking into the thought each time, but we'll cover the context in a minute. In verse 5 it says, walk in wisdom toward them that are without, redeeming the time. And that's the exact same expression. So I'm sure, again, John, you probably have a similar, make the most of your time, just like before. So other translations translate that differently because, in fact, more of them translate it differently here than do in Ephesians for whatever reason. But it's obvious there what it's talking about. So you make the best use of your time. Make good use of every opportunity that you have. That's the way the Good News Translation has it. Make good use of every opportunity that you have. New American Standard says, make the most of every opportunity. So, the question then, I've covered these two verses, that's pretty quick coverage, but I think it for me, it cleared it up a little bit. I never understood what it meant to buy time. But the question then is, make best use of your time to do what? It doesn't specifically say in those verses. Well, I think we do have one there in verse 5 of Colossians. You know, what is the context here? What are these verses talking about? What is it that you're supposed to be doing with your time, that I'm supposed to be doing with my time? And as I said, the Bible's full of things that we could and should be doing with our time, and I can't possibly cover them all, and I don't intend to. but we'll cover the ones that are involved in the context here anyway. And since we're in Colossians, we'll do that first. In Colossians chapter 4, in verse 5, it says, "Walk in wisdom toward them that are without." So I'm going to start making a list, and I imagine that we'll have the board filled by the time we get done. Right here in the very same verse, we have that we are to conduct ourselves with wisdom to outsiders. It's referring to the Christians and non-Christians. So I'll put that down. WRT, with respect to. Walk with wisdom, because that's right here in the same verse. And look at verse 6 while we're here. It says, "Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how to answer every man." So there we have another one. Now, that's going to say, I can fill the board up. Speech seasoned with grace. I'm counting on you to expand this list, and I'll be writing it down. I don't have as much time left as some of you. Some of you are a lot younger than I am, so I've got to make better use of my time maybe than you do, because I don't have as much of it left. So this list is for me. Let's go back to Ephesians, where we started, and look at the context there. What's Paul talking about? In what way does he want the Ephesians, and by extension us, to make good use, or the most use, or the best use of the time that we have and the opportunities? It's not just time. The point, they're using time as the word there, and as the commodity that needs to be purchased. But the point is not time for its own sake. It's time to do something. What is it that we ought to be doing? What given the time that we have, what's important, an important use of it? What are the important uses of it? So, again, in Ephesians chapter 5, we got a context that really involves a lot of verses. We can go back to verse 7, for instance, where we have a therefore. When you have a therefore, you've got a new section, a new thought. So that's probably a good place to go back to. And what you have there, excuse me. Let's go back there. Yeah, back to verse 7. It says, don't be partakers with them, okay? That's the children of disobedience. They're identified in verse 6. So you have outsiders that are bad influences, right? And what's it saying there? It says, don't participate with those that are walking in darkness. That's, of course, very good advice. I apologize for the break as I write these things down, but I'm going to give you a chance to write them too. So this is in the context, and this is important advice for a young person. I have a tremendous advantage of growing up, as many of us have, in this way of life, and I had a lot of opportunities to spend time with people who were good role models for me in the church. I also, I had the other opportunities with friends in school or when I went to college. There's all kinds of things going around that were opportunities to participate in works of darkness. And, you get to learn, sometimes the hard way, what are the good decisions. But the Bible's full of advice to not test the bad. Don't even go there. You don't have to experiment to find out what works. These things don't work. Works of darkness, works that are not in the light. We sang a song about being, God's, the light of Christ shining on us. As a Christian, we are to be in the light. It sounds like it sounds trite in a way, but it's not. It's full of meaning, and that could be obviously a whole sermon on its own. But the point is here in Ephesians, and it mentions it again. We're going to get to it a little later. It's not to participate in those works of darkness. Sometimes you just know. You know, certain people are trouble. Certain groups of people or certain environments are trouble. Don't even go there, because why subject yourself to the temptation? And Paul, of course, here is writing to people who were Gentiles, and they had participated in all the rites and ceremonies of the Roman Empire and emperor worship and the worship of the Roman gods. And he's saying, you know, you don't need to, as we say in our modern terminology, don't go there. Don't even need to start. Don't need to experiment. Don't need to try it out. You know, you've rejected that. That was darkness. He uses the term dark and light. The whole Bible's full of that. You know, now you're not in that way anymore. You're walking in the light. So don't go there, and don't cooperate with or participate with those that are doing it. That doesn't mean you can't have relationships with people that are not of the same mind. But you have to be careful about those relationships and not follow them into false worship or wrong ideas, wrong approaches. Excuse me. And the flip side of that, in a way, is in verse 8. It says, "For you were sometimes in darkness, but now are you light in the Lord. Walk as children of light." So the opposite of this, you know, there's what not to do. Don't do this, but do walk in the light. And again, growing up in a church from the time I was about 9, I've had opportunity to do both. And sometimes it's not easy. And I've made a lot of mistakes in my life, and I did when I was younger, but I had some successes as well. And one of the things I learned the hard way, I was about 16, and I was staying with someone that I worked for, not directly for, but I worked for this guy. And he was an elder in the church, and he took me to a movie that I felt uncomfortable being at, and I walked out of the movie. And that was a really, really hard thing for a 16-year-old to do, the pressure, you know, in a way. But it was a good thing for me to do that early on in my life. Now, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. That just happened to be a good decision I made at a certain time. I made plenty of bad decisions where I should have walked out of things or walked away from things, and I didn't. So that's not that I made the best decision every time. But that was a decision in my mind at the time of saying, no, I don't want to participate in this work. I don't want to watch this because I don't feel it's appropriate for my own reasons for what I was taught in the church. And I wanted to walk in the light, so I felt like I need to get out. My conscience was bothering me, and I left. And he made fun of me for it after that. So that's just the way it was. So walk in the light. That's right in the context here. We're going to look at these verses from verse 7 on up to where we were. If we continue on, let's see, that was verse verse 8. And then as a parenthetical clause here, at least the way it's translated in the King James, it says, "For the fruit of the Spirit is all goodness and righteousness and truth." excuse me. And we'll come back to the fruit of the Spirit here in a minute. Let's look at verse 10. "Proving what is acceptable unto the Lord." Does anybody have a different word than proving in your translation? John, yeah, he's got all these things. What do you got this time? Try to discern or try and discern? Did I hear you? Try to discern what's pleasing to the Lord. Anybody have anything else?
New King James says finding out what's acceptable.
Finding out. Okay. Anybody got something else? That's an interesting word also. I didn't study it at length. But the word, you know, it has to do with finding out, discerning. It's translated all these different ways. And it's because the word has to do with, in the King James, says proving. Now, proving, some of you have had geometry, I guess. I remember my geometry class. You had to prove everything, right? I had a class in college where I had to prove everything. That was really hard. We just had an assumption that some numbers are bigger than others, and we proved calculus starting with that. Everything, every concept, everything we developed all the way to calculus from the concept that there is such a thing as a number 2 that's bigger than a number 1, maybe. Everything else we proved. That was a really hard class. But I understand the concept of proving, and you do if you've had any of those kinds of classes. The point here is not that kind of a proof in the sense of some kind of a, you know, QED type thing. It's more of a testing and trying to find out, as Sue said, the New King James has this. It's you are experimenting is kind of the wrong word because you don't want to try the bad things. The point is practice the good things, do the good things, and that will prove to you through experience and through the experience of doing it and seeing that it works, you will see that God is pleased with this, that, or the other thing. So, excuse me, we're testing in a sense. We're testing or learning what is pleasing to God. So that's in the context here too. Well, the pace here is a little bit slow because I'm taking time to write. But the reason the pace is slow, not just that I'm writing, but I'm giving you time to put your own notes. Because when I'm done here in the context, I want to add to this list from your experience and your input. Okay, so be thinking, and it doesn't have to be things that are just in this particular context. We're just taking what's here. But we're going to expand on that. Verse 11, have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. Well, that's what we already read that in verse 7. You know, we're not to have not to have or participate in the works of darkness. And here they're called unfruitful works of darkness. For it is a shame, in verse 12, even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. Look at verse 13. But all things that are reproved are made manifest in the light, for whatsoever does make it manifest is light. Point being, you know, don't be afraid to even speak out if need be, but at least be able to identify the works of darkness. And don't be afraid to say something about it when it's appropriate. It's not God hasn't appointed us as watchdogs to point out every evil in the world and, you know, go up to people's face and tell them they're doing something wrong. That's not the point. But be able to discern what's good and what's wrong and what's right. Practice what's right. And I think here, some of the commentaries say this, that it's more of a context of in the Christian community. If something's wrong, we need to speak up. And there's a way to do that. There's a part of the Bible's got all kinds of things about that, how we do it. But we shouldn't let open sin, like Paul was dealing with in 1 Corinthians 5, with the what would be considered incest. You know, you don't let that stuff go on. You got to speak up when those kind of things enter the church. That's more the environment. We're not going to change the world, but the church needs to be different than the world. And if it's not, then somebody needs to say something. Excuse me. Wherefore, he says, verse 14, awake, you that sleep, and arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. So here, when you awake, and I could put this separate point, but I won't. But the point is, when you wake up, you know, you're this way. You're involved in the works of darkness. And as a Christian, we wake up and then we walk in the light. And this sounds like it's a quote from the Old Testament, but it's not. It's like that, you know, the rivers of living water that you look and say, well, it's not really there exactly. Perhaps it's a quote that combines different Old Testament verses. Perhaps it's a quote from some contemporary hymn. They had many hymns. Their worship services were much more musical than ours, and they had baptismal hymns, and they had other kind of hymns, and they sung them and shared them all the time, and sang them to each other, as we'll read. So it's possible that was one of those hymns that he's quoting from, not necessarily a scripture that he's quoting from. Verse 15. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise. Okay, so that's like the immediate context. Again, walk with wisdom. Walk carefully. And then it says redeeming the time because the days are evil. Or making the best use of your time, making the best use of the opportunities that you have. The point is, you know, none of us is going to live forever. We only have so much time. So Paul's advice and God's advice, the Bible's advice, is make the best use of those opportunities that you have, whatever they are, opportunities for good. And don't waste your time involving yourself in opportunities for evil and bad, because there's plenty of those, more than enough. And they're all calling out. You know, the Proverbs are full of that. You know, the temptations of all of those things. They're out there everywhere, you know, and they didn't have television and movies and music and all recorded music like we have today. They didn't have all that stuff when Proverbs was written, but you read Proverbs, it's as if they did. It's as if they did, because some things never change, and the attraction of a sinful way of life has never changed. It's always been the same. It's just, I would suggest, more prevalent now with our society because you can't escape it, the way we're all interconnected and the way we can communicate. In ancient times, I shouldn't say ancient times, just 150 years ago, you could be isolated in a way that you aren't now. You could have your own way of life. It's very difficult now. You watch the Amish and the men, some of the conservative Mennonites. They have their own societies. They try to stay secluded from everybody else to a certain extent. That's what you'd have to do now in order to stay separate. It's not as easy. Not as easy. But the Proverbs still apply. It's the same thing. Verse 17, wherefore, don't be unwise, but understanding what is the will of the Lord. So once again, that's back to learning what's pleasing to God. Testing. Finding out what's pleasing to God and then practicing those things. Verse 18. Don't be drunk with wine wherein is excess, but be filled with the Spirit. Now that's interesting. That's an interesting contrast. It's saying don't be filled with wine, or I'll put it positive. Be filled with the Holy Spirit, not wine. That's the way he phrases it. You're going to be not necessarily filled with one or the other, but you know we're going to choose a way of life. I'm behind a truck on the way up here. In fact, we were behind a bunch of trucks, and they were jockeying for position. And a whole bunch of people were driving slowly because these three trucks couldn't decide which one ought to be in front of the other. And as soon as one took like 5 minutes to get in front of one, then another one pulled out and got in front. So it took quite a while. But anyway, one of these trucks that were behind had a picture of a road on the back of the truck and a fork in the road. One led to Christ and one led to the ways of the world. The point is, though, that's exactly right. There's two ways of life. You know, there's that fork in the road, and we've chosen the way that it leads toward Christ, it leads toward the Father. And in our lives, at least the significant choices that we make fall under that. In other words, you're going to make a choice. Is that going to lead us closer to God, and is that going to help us to continue to walk in the direction that we've decided we're going to walk, or is that going to pull us in another direction? I've said this before, but I'll say it again. When I go to Haiti, or when I go to Thailand, or go to the cultures are different, number one, and two, they're not as experienced in Christianity. Perhaps the Haitians are, for the most part. But when I explain repentance, I talk in terms of walking. You're walking this way. And then, you know, repentance is a word that means turn in Hebrew. You turn, you go the other way. And every choice you make in life, and I'm preaching to the choir, I understand that, but we have some young people, and I'm sharing these things more so for their perspective. Every choice you make in your life is going to be one that helps you either continue on the same path that you've decided you're going to go, or go the other direction. And for those of us that develop our sensibilities within a Christian context, we don't have that experience of repentance in the same sense. We have not walked. I haven't, you haven't, those of you who are younger, those of us that grew up in the church, or some of you that are older that grew up in the church, you know, we haven't walked the other way so that we had to make a turn and walk toward God. We weren't worshiping Caesar. We weren't walking in a wrong direction. That doesn't mean we didn't make any mistakes. Of course we do. But at some point we decide, you know, we want this way of life for our entire rest of our life. We go through the rite of baptism, and we're outwardly saying, God, this is for me. This is what I want. I devote my life to you. But we don't have to change from having devoted our life in some other direction because we grew up in this way. And that's a wonderful blessing for those of us that have been blessed that way. So sometimes we can hear a minister or somebody that's speaking talk about, you know, repenting and having these wrong ways of life, and those kind of things don't really apply to us, and we think, that's not us. It doesn't mean anything. But it does, in the sense that we do have to continue on that path. Even if we've never veered from it to a significant degree where we just said, I don't want this way of life. I'm going this way, the way I see my friends. Many do that. Many people that have grown up in a Christian context to say, no, I don't want that anymore. But even when you say, I want this way of life, I like this way of life, it's a bit of a battle to stay on the right path because there's all these little turnoffs. And some of them look pretty attractive. Some of them are tricky. And it takes discernment, as somebody said, the translation on testing, seeing what's good, seeing what God, what's pleasing to God. There's discernment involved there. You need to recognize the difference between light and darkness. It's not always easy. But let me tell you this, and I think some of you that are my age and older can confirm it. You're deep down, most of the time, you know. You can say, something looks all right, but, you know, in the back of your mind, it's like, I'm going to go here, I'll try this anyway, because, you know, and you make excuses. I make excuses. But really deep down, because God gives us that ability through His Spirit, deep down, a lot of times, I would say most of the time, we know. We know that this is veering off the path. And my recommendation is to all of us, and especially the younger ones, just listen to that. Listen to that voice. You know, they go, you ever seen the cartoons about the conscience? The conscience is sitting on your shoulder, speaking in your ear. You know, you have that one with the halo and the one with the pitchfork, and they're both trying to get you to decide which way you're going to go. Listen to the one with the halo. You know better. You know better because you've been taught. You sit in church week after week after week, ever since you're born. You know, it's a lot of that soaked in, and you know. So listen to it. It'll save you a lot of heartache. I know, you know, I didn't listen to it as often as I should have. I made mistakes, but I saved myself a lot of heartache in my life by listening to what I was being told in my church environment, and by listening to my parents, even though. There were times I resented some of the things that my parents, especially my dad, told me. Still, that voice, I mean, into my 30s, late 30s, that voice was always there. You know, still there sometimes. I still dream every once in a while. He's watching what I'm doing. I was like, you know. Listen to what they taught you. Okay, got out of the verses here for a minute. Had to do with being filled with the Spirit, not filled with alcohol. The point is not that, you know, they are necessarily opposites. Like you're going to be filled with one or the other. You're not going to necessarily be filled with alcohol. But that's a symbolic of the way of the world. That you are drunk, in a sense, on the ways of sin. And specifically, Paul's saying, don't do that. Don't get drunk. But he's also saying, you know, that's a way of life that you want to stay away from. You're going to be filled with one or the other. Verse 19. Speak to yourselves. And remember, think of them. I'm going to make more of a list. We've got a lot of board up here, okay? So I want your input as to ways to add life to your days. For those of us that are, what am I? 62. Some of us, not a whole lot of days left, and some of us with a lot. So, looking forward to that in a minute. Verse 19, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. So as I said, music was a bigger part of their interaction than it is with us, because we got an MP3, we listen to it on our phone, we listen to it on the radio. And they had to, back in those days, they had to make the music. And if you wanted to have music in a group, you didn't turn the radio on. Well, somebody had to sing. And so there was a lot more, you know, even up till, as I said, 150 years ago or so, there was a lot more live music. And when I travel, especially to Asia, where these hill tribe young men and women don't have the radios and the TVs and all this kind of stuff, they all play an instrument and they can sing. And it's just because they want to have entertainment and they got to make their own. So here's another one that may not be as applicable to us or to some of us, but it's here, so I'm going to write it down. Serve others with music. That's an interesting topic. Somebody wants to develop that. How do we do that today? Maybe we should do it more. We sing our hymns together and sometimes share some special music. That's a way we can do it. Verse 20. Giving thanks always for all things unto God and the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. So giving thanks, being thankful. That's another way. Now, most of you, even those of us that are younger, you have friends. All of us have friends that are very thankful, and they're wonderful examples. They're good people to be around. It's a pleasant environment to be in because they're thankful of everything. But I guarantee, I assume all of us have friends that are not thankful, don't we? Maybe sometimes we're a little bit this way, sometimes we're a little bit this way. You have friends that complain about everything, and no matter how much they have, it's not enough. And that's the opposite of this. God wants us to be thankful. Paul's admonishing us to be thankful because it puts us in a better frame of mind. If you're focusing on what you don't have as if that's a problem, then that's the attitude that was the problem in the Garden of Eden, right? I can't have this tree, and I'm going to obsess on that. That's the point there. It's like, God says, here's what's good for you, here's what's not. And the account in the Garden of Eden is pointing out that human beings have a natural tendency to focus on what they can't have and get a negative attitude about it and disobey God. And that's an important lesson. And don't miss that. We need to be thankful, to go back into that story. We need to be thankful for all the trees we can have instead of obsessing over the one we can't have. But it's a natural human tendency to obsess on the thing that we can't have. So that's wise advice, and put that down. Be thankful. That's a way to add life to your years, and some people would argue that's a way to add years to your life, that being in a thankful and a positive attitude actually helps your body to battle some of the things that we have to battle, especially as we get older, and that it can add years to our life. That was part of the what that book was about, where that quote came from. And there have been other books about that, of course. We'll get down to verse 21, and that's the end of the thought. Then we get into specifics about wives and husbands and so forth. But verse 21 says, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. So there's another way to add life to your years, and you might not think so, but it's there. Submit to others. Now, you can't approach this too logically. I tend to be a logical, black and white, A plus B equals C kind of a person. You can't approach this totally logical, because if everybody submitted to everybody else, nobody would ever make a decision. I had a friend like that. Still have a friend like that. I mean, still my good friend. And we used to ride around. We were both single. And where do you want to go eat? I don't know. Where do you want to go eat? Nobody could make a decision because we submitted to each other all the time. And that's not the point here. Obviously, people make decisions and people have preferences and so forth. But have that attitude of submitting to one another. Now, what does that mean then? It means that you want what's good for the other person. You want what will benefit them. You want what will make them happy. And if we all have that attitude, it doesn't mean nobody will ever make a decision. But the decisions we make will be for the purpose of helping, encouraging others. You can't make somebody happy, but you can improve their environment. You make choices and decisions that are for the benefit of others. A good example of that, of course, is maybe some of you don't deal with this, but some of us have to deal with a lot of traffic, okay, in our commutes and so forth. And there are people out there that are considerate, and there are people that aren't. And that's there's hardly any place in life where that's more obvious than on a highway. And there's all different types. And we are ourselves a mixture, some kind of a type. Those of us in the room here that like to always give when we're in traffic, we end up in these, lanes where everybody cuts ahead and whatever. So, there's all kind of different ways it's expressed. But when you submit to one another, you have an attitude of, I want what's good for you. I want what's good for you. And maybe somebody can make a decision on which place you stop to go eat. Maybe you can't, but that's not the point exactly. The point is, you're not in it for yourself. You're in it to serve others. We have that up here, serve others with music. But that's also, that's what's specifically here. Maybe somebody will bring that up when we get into the adding to the list, which is coming right up here. So Paul, in two different places, is saying that you only have so much time. He's talking to people that have already been walking in a wrong direction for all their lives up to this point, and now they're walking in a different direction. And he's saying, you wasted a lot of time doing this, but now you have a chance. You're walking this way. It's the right way. You've got only so much time left. Make the best use of it. Do what you can to take advantage of every opportunity that God gives you for the rest of your life. And that goes back. I need to erase this because it's not Abraham Lincoln. Goes back to that quote from the beginning, and that is, we really can add life to our years if we make the right choices. And that's why we're here. The point is not like who has the most toys wins. The point is not who lives the longest wins. The point is who can do the most for others. That's who wins. That's what God's put us here to serve Him and to serve others. That's the way the commandments are written. Here there's four of them about serving Him, six of them about serving others, and everything else fits into that into that framework. So again, I could go into other parts of the Bible, and we could spend sermon after sermon after sermon adding to those lists. We're not going to do that. What I'd like to do, though, is open it up now. We have a lot of years of experience in this room, and what I would like to do is get some statements, things that some input, and we'll condense them down so we can write them. I can write them on the board. But you've had a lot of experience, and you've done things right and you've done things wrong. Some things work, some things don't. And we've had a chance to evaluate all those things, many of us who had a lot of years on the earth. So what I'd like to do is add to this list, I've got a whole empty board over here, ways to add life to our days. And I'm not going to put anything up there. I want to give you a chance to add. We can discuss it. You can discuss it back and forth before I just write it up there. We can make them pithy, whatever we need to do. So what do you have, anybody who wants to start off? Right.
Helping others that need help.
Helping those in need. That's a good way to put it. You got only have so much time. There's always people that are in need. You can't fix the world, but...
the ones that are close to you.
Yes. And once again, those translations use the term opportunity. Now, you can't fix the world, but there are those, like you said, that are right next to you, right with you, your relatives, your close friends, your neighbors that need help. And when God gives the opportunity, and you're the one that's in the position to do it, that's just a wonderful thing. And God more than returns what we give. I think that's another song. I don't know. Maybe it's a song in the hymnal. Sorry, I wasn't prepared for that. But the point is, it's sowing seed, or cast your bread upon the water because it comes back. The point is, God sees to that. You don't have to worry about it. You're going to give too much. You're going to help people too much, and somehow it's going to hurt you. Okay, anything, any other thing on this before we move on? Helping those in need. All right.
I was just going to say, along those same lines, the gifts that you're given, that God has given you, sharing those gifts with believers and non-believers. So that's part of being light. Yes?
Yes.
I was thinking on the other part that you were going to, you know, Pilgrim's Progress? If you know the book or
yes.
the story, you know, how they veer off the path and come back, and that's getting more life.
So you said, I added God-given, you know, and that's your point, is that God gives us certain gifts, and use them to help others, and whether they're in or out of, you know, our particular fellowship or way of thinking. And I put God-given, and the point is you have been given some gifts. And I remember one time, I'll just share this, being a bit frustrated that I wasn't good at something that I felt that I should be doing as a Christian and as a part of the church. And a friend, not a close friend, somebody from another area, Hugh knows him, I think he's better acquainted with him than I am, kind of reminds me of Hugh. And he said to me, that's not your gift, maybe. You know, he wasn't telling me that wasn't my gift, he didn't know me that well, but he said, maybe that's not your gift. You don't need to feel badly about not being good at that, because if God didn't give you that gift, that's not your fault. You know, other people have that gift, they can do it, you do something else. So because you see an admonition in the Bible to do this or do that or do whatever, you also have to keep in mind that God has given the gifts, what's the word in the King James, severally, you know, it's differently. Not everybody has the same gift. So you have to use the one you have, you have to use the one you have, or the ones, you know, it's more than one. And again, when you're filled with the Spirit, you know, you will be able to serve other people, whether they're on the inside or the outside. That's really... I think what Paul says is especially those in the household of faith. I think, is it Paul that said that? I forget. I didn't. You know, the point is we want to serve those that we're in fellowship with. That's important. Maybe that's an especially, but it's not an only. It's not a don't serve others. You know, we are to serve others too. And how are the examples going to be set for them if we don't? So very important. Thank you. You use your God-given gifts to help others, both within and without of our fellowship and our circle, you might say. Anybody else? Yes.
Okay. Along that same lines, well, I guess I have to be the one that mentioned music, and I can't speak for, or I guess I should speak for Rick, who's not here today, but yeah, that's serving others with music, and it's like, he seems like he just cannot spread his self thin enough around to different congregations to be a help with his gift. And I also want to say, Don't wait or think that gift, if like for instance in my case, I play music too. I'm not as good as Rick, but it's still a gift to me. Rick has a stronger gift. But don't let that gift, thinking you don't have as big a portion as somebody else, hinder you from not using it.
Good point.
See how I can phrase that. I gotta put that in something shorter. That's really good.
Yeah.
That's a really good idea. Let's put it this way. I'm going to put it as a negative. Don't minimize or neglect the gift God gives. And I'll put in parentheses, don't compare. So that's a negative. I didn't have time to think of a positive way to put it. It's a very good point, though.
How many times have you heard somebody say, oh, I'm just not that good at that, you know? And so we don't serve. We don't do what we can do because somebody's better than us, or we just don't feel we're good enough, you know? And how can I this isn't universally true. But I think sometimes, as you know, to put a nice spin on that in a way, We don't want to step out. We're afraid we might make a mistake, or we're afraid we might not do it perfectly. And so we're hesitant to do even what God is, maybe the Spirit is motivating us to do something, but we let our fear be stronger. And there should be no fear. The Holy Spirit is not a spirit of fear. So if we're fearing something that the Spirit's, that's something the Spirit is not giving us. We're fear, whatever it is, rejection, we fear, that's it's a carnal thing, if I can use that word. It's a human thing. We're fearing some kind of a negative feedback that we really shouldn't fear. We should be wanting to give and share. And that's, and I've seen that. I've seen that a lot. You have people that are less forward, less open, and they're afraid to reach out to others. And I've seen them that once they do that, then they're very good at it. And they have a gift, but they didn't share it because they're just afraid of the reaction they might get. Don't be afraid of that. Very good. Very good. Thank you. Anybody else? Yes, Jim. So how am I going to phrase that?
Keep a song in your heart.
Keep, is it keep or have?
Keep.
And we could take that, you know, metaphorically as well, right? I mean, that it has to do with state of mind. You always say, well, I'm no good at music. Okay, that's not the point here. The point is to have that frame of mind where you're, you know, something positive. Good. I didn't remember that. Lawrence Welk used to be on in my home a lot, and I'd watch enough of it, but I don't remember him saying that. That's what he would say? Okay. It didn't stick with me. I remember Red Skelton saying good night and may God bless, but... Anybody else? These can be specific things, too. I mean, these are kind of specific. Some of these have to do with just general attitudes, but you could have a specific thing. Yes?
I think it's important that, especially now, because you started off with talking about how the days are evil, I think it's important that you're ready to give an answer of the reason for hope that lies in us. I found myself in a situation about a week or so ago where I was... in a shop with a person who I was depending on to repair my computer. And I know this guy to be bright and knows how to repair computers, and he's very knowledgeable about all things computer, and I respect him, and I've taken my computer there several times. But as I was checking out, I noticed that he had some kind of setup to the right of the countertop that was a very old Bible and a picture and of a, looked like an African man with a hyena and a little bowl with some, looked like an incense kind of a thing and this and that and the other. And I kind of glanced over at it and looked at it. There was nobody here. It was after hours. It had closed at 5, but we ran overtime, so the place was empty. And he said, that's really interesting over there. Are you interested in the truth? And I went, yeah, I'm interested in the truth. He goes, do you know the truth? I said, yeah, I know the truth. So he went, kind of launched into his spiel of the things that somebody had been coming into his shop teaching him. And he kind of like went way out on a branch. Like, now there was little bits of truth mixed in there. But there was a whole lot of error. And he was real excited about this. So I was in a situation where it was either completely ignore this and walk out and let this guy go, or spend a little time. And I spent a little time talking to him. And I hope I was able to lead him in a direction that he needed to learn more before he believed what he was listening to. But you have to be ready, and especially in these days, because there's all kinds of people out there, and you may find yourself boxed in. And when you're boxed in, those things that you've been learning for a long time, you don't have your Bible there. Your Bible is, you know, in your heart and in your mind. I think he had a Bible on the table. But it, people's interpretation of it, and they may ask you, what is it that you believe? You have to be ready to give an answer. And you're praying the whole time that you're saying the right thing, and you're not going to crawl out on that limb with these people, because I'm telling you, this was some of the wackiest stuff I ever heard in my life. There was just enough truth mixed in. And this guy had been raised, I think, Christian, because he understood Adam and Eve, he understood Genesis, he understood Garden of Eden, he knew those things. But somebody had come in and infiltrated all that with a bunch of lies. So I told him, you got to remember, that's exactly what happened in the Garden of Eden. There was a little bit of truth mixed in there. And sometimes there is a little bit of truth. But people want to know what the truth is. It would be nice to be able to give them something to meditate on after you leave.
Good point. And God will put us in situations at times where we have that opportunity and we can walk away from it. I remember when I was quite a lot younger, might not even been married yet, but I remember I had one of those opportunities and I walked away from it, and I regretted it later. I think I wasn't prepared, even though I'd grown up in the church. I should have, you know, I kind of had the answers, but maybe not. I didn't have the confidence yet, or whatever. But it's good to know, especially young people, know what you believe, so that you can defend it if you need to. But what's even more importantly is that occasionally, like Bonnie's saying, you have an opportunity sometimes to witness to somebody who is looking or is open to input. And, you know, if you're looking, put yourself in their shoes. They're looking for something. God might be ready to show them something, and you might be the vehicle through whom that happens. So be ready to give that answer. Good point. Thank you. Anybody else? I've got one. I've got more than one. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Okay. Thank you. That's an easy one. One word. People hold on to grudges forever. My wife's family, well, my family too, but my wife, we had some great examples in her family of grudges that were held over relatively, I thought, minor things sometimes. It just went on for a long, long time. And they've got to eat at you, I guess. It's not that.
It doesn't make you sick.
It can make you physically sick, yeah. So learn to forgive. And the Bible's full of instruction on that, and you know that is God's way, and we're healthier for it. Yes, John.
How about trying to be positive and friendly toward others?
Positive and what? Sorry.
And friendly.
Okay.
Positive and friendly outlook toward others.
Yeah, I mean, that's good. And the Bible, you can read it. You got to read the whole thing. There are times, and you see in the Bible, Paul would do it. He would debate. He would take people on. But there were other times he didn't, just like we read, you know, John was reading today. Or Jim, I'm sorry. Jim was reading today. Where he's you know, Paul, he could approach and say, hey, well, wait a minute now, and be a little more conciliatory when he needed to be. But it can be part of our nature, it's part of mine, to be contentious. My dad actually said that about my brother and I shortly before he died. He says, you guys are contentious. Don't fight over anything when I die. And we didn't. We weren't going to fight over anything. But I guess he was correct about the contentious part. We could tend to be that way. but don't be that way. You know, don't just be friendly, be outgoing, be. It sounds simple, but it's a huge thing. There's a lot of people that go through life kind of miserable because they don't trust anybody. Hey, here's the problem with that. Not that there's a problem. Here's the problem with being that way. What do you have to be positive and friendly toward others? What do you also have to be inside? Somewhat. How are people going to get to know you? Only if you are open. That's not the word I was looking for, but that's part. It's getting there. I'm looking for another word. In order to open is right. That's exactly right. And what does being open make you?
Vulnerable.
This is what makes it hard. If you're open, that means you're vulnerable. What do I mean by vulnerable? Or what does Ray mean? What's that mean if you're vulnerable? You can
get hurt.
You can get hurt. That's what it means. In order to be everything that God wants us to be, which includes these things, like positive and friendly toward others, you have to be, to a certain extent, vulnerable. I mean, who's the epitome of being vulnerable in the book? Jesus, right? He experienced everything that we experience, only more. He was vulnerable. He volunteered for the ultimate invulnerability. It's the way we read it anyway. So that's our example. And none of us really like being vulnerable too much because it hurts when you get hurt. But you can't really have a connection with somebody else unless you're open. And the only way we can be of true service to our fellow man is to be a certain amount of there has to be a certain amount of openness. You have to be willing to reach out and serve somebody with the realization that you could be rejected, you could be criticized, you could be any number of things, or just not thanked. Nobody cares. And it hurts. But you do it anyway. That's really good. You got to be vulnerable. You got to be willing to be vulnerable. I'm not saying you have to, I shouldn't say you have to be vulnerable. You have to be willing to be vulnerable if that's what it takes. I had that one down. Anything else? Anything your mom told you, your dad told you that now is the time to share? Because they lived a long time and they learned something. I'm going to share one. My mom, because I tend to be as they used to call, type A, hyper, do a million things. I've been that way ever since a week before the feast. I'm working long hours. I'm just doing all kinds of stuff. My mom said, what do you think she said?
Slow down.
Yeah, that's one of the things. What's the expression?
Stop and smell.
Yeah. My mom used to tell me that all the time. She said, tomorrow, see, I would, in her opinion, I was doing way too much. From the time I was in my late 20s, early 30s. And she said, you know, you die today, tomorrow the world will go on. They'll get along without you. No, thanks, Mom. But she's right. So you guys that are a lot younger than me, the world will go on when you're gone. The world's going to go on when I'm gone. Take the time to smell the roses. I could put it this way. Take time to be friendly to the animals. Have this friend out west, and every once in a while, I didn't see him that often, but I'd think of him in the winter because my office back in, when I lived in Pennsylvania, my office was in the basement, and we had a huge bird feeding station above on the deck above where my office was. And so the ones that weren't brave enough to get up on the deck would stay down and get all the stuff that fell down. And so there'd sometimes be 20, 30 birds right out in front of the window. Actually, my desk was facing the wrong way. But I turn around and look at the birds and count how many different ones there were. And it was fun. I'd share every once in a while, usually once a winter, I'd send an email to my friend Stuart and about the birds, because he also liked feeding the birds and liked birds. And he said to me one time, and I tried to look it up, I couldn't find it. So I must not have saved the email. He said, you know, when you reach the end of your life and you, I forget how he worded it. I wish I could remember how he worded it. But his point was, you don't want to have that regret that you didn't spend enough time feeding the birds, you know, or whatever. You know, his point was that you, that's good, that's time well spent feeding the birds, or, you know, cuddling with your dogs or whatever. Be friendly with animals. You know, relax a little bit and enjoy what God has provided rather than just being on this treadmill all the time. Do you have your hand up?
As Calvin's dad said, no one has ever regretted on his deathbed that he didn't spend more time at the office.
There you go. Yeah. So that was one that I wanted to share. Anybody got? I have another one, but I'll wait if anybody's got one. And this kind of turns into a lot of things. Anybody have? All right, go ahead before I ask that.
I was going to say, well, how about some other things like we learn about honor your father and mother, keeping the commandments, things like that. That can promote longer living.
Okay. I guess it goes without saying we should say we keep the commandments and that for sure. Honor your father and mother. That's where I want to go with it. I appreciate that thought though. Am I the only one? Maybe you just didn't think of it. I had he wasn't a blood grandfather. To me, he was the only real grandfather I had, who fought in World War II. He was just a ground grunt in one of the armies under Patton, coming from Africa into Italy. And that's about all I know. And we'd be at his house, and he'd be watching some World War II movie, which those things were totally, I'd never watch them. They were boring to me, and I wasn't interested in things with guns at that time anyway. But that was his life, and he would relive it, I guess, watching these movies. And he died when I was about 13, I think. And I regretted almost right away, but especially as I got to be an adult, that I think I was old enough to ask this. I never asked him details about what it was like to be an army, you know, foot soldier in World War II. What was it like? You know, I don't know anything about that. And he's gone, I can't ask him. There's things I didn't ask his wife, my grandmother. That she knows or knew. There's things even now, today, you know, Shelby and I or the kids or whatever, we'll have some kind of discussion. It's like, or a picture. You know, you get a picture. It's like, who's that person? Well, I don't know. And there's nobody around to ask anymore. The people who know who's in that picture aren't around to ask. So why am I sharing this? Obviously. Spend time with the ones you love. Spend time. That's, you know, I got the word time in there. You know, that's important. Why? Well, because either, in my case, I'm not going to be around that long, or when I was younger, they're not going to be around that long. So if you're young, spend time with, and let's just say spend time. That means talk to them. Ask the questions. Get to know what life was like back. You realize that the 50s were the old days? I forget where I saw this now. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. But the point was being made that in 13 years, I guess 12 years now, we're going to be in the 20s. It'll be the 20s. You know, well, that's when my grandmother was growing up, in the 20s. You realize that, you know, times change, but we're going to be in the 20s again. Or we're going to be in the 40s. I know what it was. It's on. I listened to the 40s on XM And they said in however many years, or no, it would be in 3 years. It was in 22 years or whatever, we'll be in the 40s. Be in the 40s again. And they play 40s music. Anyway, the point is, you know, none of us live forever. Take the time to get to know the people. I was working I've been really busy. Shelby's been helping me work. So we were working last Sunday in somebody's house. This poor woman has been in a hotel since April. So finally, they begged me to come, her real estate agent and others begged me to help come finish this job, which somebody abandoned or got fired, making a first floor habitable for her because she needs to live on a first floor. So she's been living in a hotel. So I took this job. And in order to get it done in time, Shelby and I are both working there on a Sunday. She's got three children, two of whom are dead. She only got one child alive and one grandchild. That grandchild picked her up on Sunday morning, brought her to the house where she's going to be living when she gets out of the hotel. And while we were working, they just sat in the living room and talked all day. That was a wonderful thing. The girl's like 21, and she was spent the day with her grandmother, and they just talked. They just chatted. And I don't think they were watching it too much. Well, they were talking about it, but they were sharing it. They were sharing time. And I didn't do that enough when I was younger, and I regret it. And I'm telling you guys that are younger than me, take advantage of it, because there'll be a time when they're not here. I can't ask them. Spend time. And if you're already old,
you looked up, right?
If you're already old, spend time with the young ones. You know, spend that time. Yes?
I wanted to add to be committed to whatever you do in life. That, when I was baptized in 1977, that was part of the prayer that was said over me. And I've always remembered it.
One am I committed?
Thank you. You know, do it wholeheartedly. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. That's really good. I'm glad we got that. I'm glad you remembered that or said it. And you're a young person. You know, there's a whole lot of things out there. And you can't do it all. You might think you can. Sometimes, my mom thought I was trying to do it all. But whatever it is you do decide to do, do it with all your might. Do it with all your might. Put your whole self in, you know, as it was in the song you were playing, the Hokey Pokey. You know, put your whole self into it. Anybody else? I'm done. That's all. I had those things I wanted to share. So we got a list here. You got time. Maybe you've been writing them down. Add to it. But as the song said, I was going to play it again, but I won't. And as the quote says, you know, you can't. You know, Jesus said, "Who can add anything? Add I forget what the word is. A cubit? Is it a cubit? Well, you can't add a cubit, but you couldn't even add an inch. You can't add anything to your height by thinking about it. You can't add to years to your life by thinking about it either. But you can add life to your years. So when it comes to those verses that talk about redeeming the time, it's make good use of all the opportunities that God gives you. You have so much time. You have so many opportunities. Make the best use of it.